Welcome to another episode of the Inside Public Accounting Podcast, where we turn the profession's most important data into insights that leaders can actually use. I'm Rob Brown.
And I'm Chelsea Summers, the Executive Director of Inside Public Accounting.
And today we're talking about something that every firm leader thinks they understand, turnover. Not the financial term turnover, but the labor shortage turnover. We know it's expensive. They know it's expensive. It's disruptive. Most have lived through a rough stretch of it during the last few years. But here's the thing. Many firms are only counting the costs they can see, but there are costs that they can't see. We're going to dive into that today. These are the ones that actually shape what a firm becomes, right, Chelsea?
Yeah, and that's a really good framing for this conversation, because when we look at the data, turnover isn't just a staffing metric. It's really a window into how firms are actually operating. And the picture that the data reveals is really more complicated than I think the managing partners might realize.
Yeah. And when I saw turnover as a topic, I thought we're getting really technical with the accounting side of it, because it is an accounting term. But whether it's pipeline or retention or labor shortage or anything else, it's a really important conversation. So let's start where the profession stands right now, because the headline number actually looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Turnover hit a 20-year high of 15.9% across all of our firms in 2022. So that was the peak of what most people in the profession experienced as the great resignation. So every size tier spiked at that time, and the firms above 75 million reached 19.3% that year. It was really difficult across the board.
So by turnover, let's just define terms, Chelsea. So a 20% turnover of a 15%, what would that mean in your eyes?
Yeah, so that includes voluntary turnover and involuntary turnover. So whether the firm has let somebody go or the person has left on their own, it's looking at those individuals who left the firm. And we don't capture and we don't know if they left for another firm or if they left public accounting for a client or for industry, or if they just said, I'm going to go sit on the beach somewhere and not work for a little while.
So in any given year, 15 to 20% of your headcount left for various reasons. Okay, correct. So we had a high in 2022, and yes, the pandemic shaped that. What's happened since then?
So we've seen a lot of recovery. In 2025, turnover overall fell to 11.8%. And that's actually the lowest figure in the 20-year data set that we looked at.
Goodness.
So on the surface, it really looks like crisis happened, profession adapted, and things got better.
We weathered the storm. We got over the talent pipeline. But are we declaring victory on this yet?
I don't think entirely, because the drop in turnover doesn't necessarily mean that the cost of that turnover has disappeared. In a lot of ways, it means firms are now feeling the weight of all that accumulated during those peak years. The staff who stayed, they got really stretched. And the people who left took things with them that don't necessarily show up in an exit interview. And the firms that recovered fastest, they really did it deliberately and not necessarily automatically.
There's so much in there. We hear such a lot, don't we, about mental resilience and stress and the workload and the tax seasons and everything else. So this is all in play. So let's pull the curtain back on what this turnover actually costs. We're going to look at it through three lenses you've got for us today: the financial costs, the cultural costs, which are often intangible and hidden, and the client-facing costs, because each one tells a different part of the story.
And I think each one is consistently underestimated inside of firms.
Yeah. So let's start with the financial side. It's the language that our accounting audience understands. This is where most firms think they have a handle on things. They know the metrics. They know the numbers. They're running the spreadsheets. They track recruitment fees. They know when a seat's open, they know what churn is, but what exactly is the full picture?
So the recruiting fees is just a fraction of it. And I think if most managing partners sat down and built a true cost model for one single departure, they might be kind of uncomfortable with the number that they arrive at.
Well, you're great at knowing the numbers, Chelsea. So walk us through it.
Yeah, so let's use a hypothetical that is fairly representative of what we see across mid-sized firms. So you lose a senior manager, someone that has 5 to 6 years at the firm. They have strong client relationships and they have a team that they're supervising. So visible costs are the ones that the firms typically count. A recruiting fee, if you're using outside search firms, which can easily be 20 to 25% of that first year salary.
Yeah.
Interview time for the partners and managers, which is billable time being spent on an internal problem, and then onboarding and orientation once someone's hired.
So they're just the front end costs, aren't they, of getting someone in and on a seat?
Yeah. And then you have a gap period. So those weeks or months where that seat is either empty or covered by people who already have full plates. Every hour a partner spends doing work that should be handled by that senior manager is an hour not spent on business development or client strategy. And that cost is real, but it doesn't always show up on reports.
That's such a good point. I've heard particularly expert roles are staying open for a year or more as firms have been trying to find that right person. So that seat sits empty. Everyone else has got to pick up the work. So that is an issue. And then once they're hired, there's that ramp up period, that training, getting them involved in, what's the word, inculcated into the culture. There's a lot to do still.
Yeah. And I think those costs are really underestimated. A new hire at the senior manager level is operating at maybe 60 to 70% of full productivity for the first 6 months. And that could be longer if it involves some complex client relationships. So during that entire window, the firm is paying the full salary for only partial output.
And part of that partial output is unlearning everything you brought into that new firm, particularly with all the M&A and private equity going on and brands are being pushed together and people shifting firms, moving firms. There's a lot you've got to let go of. So when you add all of that up, Chelsea, the recruiting, the gap coverage, the lost productivity during the onboarding, what are we actually talking about?
So for a senior manager role, a firm that does a real honest accounting of those costs is often looking somewhere between 75% and 150% of that person's annual salary. So if you lose five people at that level in a single year, you could be absorbing well over $1 million in costs that were really never formally tracked or even acknowledged on the income statements.
That's a shocking number, between 75 and 150% of that person's annual salary. And yet, I guess firms just absorb that, do they?
Yeah. So most firms are seeing turnover as a line item. What did we spend on recruiting rather than it's a system cost? And I think that reframing lends them to dramatically underestimate what's actually happening to their economics. When we look at revenue per FTE, it's up 13% since 2021. Sounds great. And in some ways it is, but part of that number reflects how hard the people who stayed are being pushed to compensate for the seats that are open or newly filled.
Yeah, that productivity gain doesn't always equate to real gain. Sometimes it's just the remaining staff carrying more weight.
And that has a cost too. It just shows up further down the line. It shows up in burnout and disengagement, and it could show up eventually in more turnover.
Well, that brings us nicely to the second lens we're looking through, which is the cultural cost. This is one I think that's hardest for firms to see in real time because it is tangible. What is culture? It's that soup that everyone lives in a firm. So talk us through this one.
Yeah. So the cultural costs don't show up on a spreadsheet. And that sometimes is hard to acknowledge and wrap your head around. So when someone leaves a firm, especially somebody at the manager or senior manager level, they don't just take the billable hours with them. They take the institutional knowledge that may never have been written down, the informal mentorship relationships that nobody formally assigned to them, and the trust of the team that watched them go and is now asking their own questions on whether they should stay.
Yeah, it's the stuff that's not in the handbook, right? It's up here, this tacit knowledge. I love the way you framed that. So we talked about this in an episode on promotions and leadership development, that the manager level is really where the culture of the firm gets built or broken.
And it's where the turnover is really most expensive in the ways that are hardest to recover from, because those are the people that are building up the next generation. When a strong manager leaves, it's not just their productivity that's leaving. It's the trajectory of the three or four people who they were actively developing. So that training pipeline can break down, and the people left behind often feel that before the leadership does.
It's the messy middle, and they're under the most pressure, aren't they?
Certainly. And we hear from firm leaders that it's those mid-level professionals, the managers and senior managers specifically, who are carrying the heaviest load. They're managing up through uncertainty, managing down through teams that are stretched. And many of them are doing it without the kind of structured support or clear career visibility that would give them reasons to stay.
Those middle people, they are the glue of a firm because they're bringing through the entry-level people and they're also relating to the management and the leadership and the board and the partners above them. So when they leave, the firm's pretty much losing something that might take years to rebuild.
Yeah, and I think that cultural cost really will compound quietly. It might show up in engagement scores. If you measure them in your firm, it shows up in the quality of the internal communications and whether a junior staff believes that this firm is a place worth staying for the long term. And if none of that is really visible until there is a crisis.
Yeah, that's where it comes to light. Okay, so we've talked about the financial costs. We've talked about the cultural costs. The third lens you mentioned is the client side. And clients don't often get mentioned in this as a victim of the whole turnover thing. This is one that most directly threatens the revenue of a firm.
And I think it's nearly impossible to quantify, which is why it gets underestimated. So here's a picture of something that I think a lot of firms will recognize. A client's worked with the same senior manager for 4 years. They call that person, they have a question, they trust that person's judgment. They've had conversations on succession planning and growth strategy and things that go well beyond the compliance agreement. And then they get a call that their contact has left. A new person's being assigned and relationship resets.
And it is a relationship because that accounting advisor will know the client, their wife's name, their kids' names, their dog's names, what football team they support. All of that is wrapped up in that relationship. So at that moment, the client starts to make a calculation. They've lost their point of contact, their point of trust.
Yeah. They're asking whether the firm still understands their situation and whether the new person will get up to speed quickly enough to actually be useful to them. And whether it might be worth at least having a conversation with that other firm that keeps calling them. Most of the clients won't leave immediately, but that relationship becomes fragile in a way that it was not before.
We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
And if the relationship was just compliance, if you were just handing over a set of accounts, that would work. But this becomes especially significant as firms build out advisory services because you need to know a whole lot more than the accounts about a client.
And yeah, I think this is a tension that is important to talk about. Compliance work really can survive turnover more easily because the work is so process driven. There are files, there are records, there are workflows that can be handed off. But advisory relationships really built on trust, and that context does not transfer in an onboarding checklist.
Yeah, we've talked about advisory and compliance on this show before. You've put some real data behind that. But it appears here that the firms that are most aggressively building advisory as the future, also the ones where turnover is going to hit them the most at the client level.
The more a firm's value is tied to relationships and judgment, the more a departure costs in ways that are not going to show up on reports. You won't see it as a lost client necessarily. You'll see it as a client who may pull back on a project, a client who doesn't expand the relationship, a referral that just never materializes. So there are real economic losses and they're completely invisible.
This is such an important conversation. So let's recap here. We've established that the financial costs of turnover are higher than a firm thinks. We've established that the cultural costs are really difficult to see, but they're bigger than most firms realize. And the client costs are much more significant than firms can even measure, particularly if they're moving into the advisory space. So all that said, the obvious question in my mind is, why are accounting firms who are so good at the data, why are they missing this or misunderstanding this?
Yeah, there's a couple of patterns I see in the data and in conversations with firm leaders. First is that firms only measure what's visible. So recruiting spend, days to fill, those are numbers that can make it into a report. The real cost, the lost productivity, the relationship disruption, cultural erosion are hard to quantify. So they don't tend to get quantified at all.
Yeah, they're in a spreadsheet. We can see them. But once they're out of mind, what you're saying is they're out of budget too.
Yeah. And I think the second pattern we see is normalization. There's a very widespread belief in the profession that some level of turnover is just a cost of doing business, which is true. You train people, they leave, you hire more. But I think that belief is so embedded that many firms don't even question whether it has to be that way.
Yeah, and I'm hearing a lot about the forever firm now. Some firms are positioning themselves as this is a place where you can come and stay and put down some roots and you don't need to go anywhere else. So that seeing this as it could be a problem. Okay, you said there's different patterns. We've said it doesn't show up in the spreadsheet. You then said normalization. It becomes a cost of doing business. What's the third?
Firms treat every departure as an individual, rather than looking at the departures as a systemic signal inside the firm. So when someone leaves, the instinct is to ask, why did this person leave? But I think that's the wrong question. The right question is, does this pattern tell us, what does it tell us about how we're operating? And most firms don't get to that second question because they're too focused on immediately filling the seat.
That's so insightful. You're right. They just see it as a spotlight on a problem rather than a floodlight on a problem. So, and there's a human version to this as well. The firm raises salaries after a rough year and then gets surprised when people keep leaving anyway, because it's not about the money. They think they've solved for the visible problem, and they maybe have, but it's the invisible stuff.
And that happens all the time. So compensation matters. It's really table stakes. You have to be competitive on pay in order to stay in the game. But the data shows that people leave managers and cultures. Pay is often maybe an excuse on an exit survey, but the environment is usually a contributor to the reason.
Yeah, you hear that phrase, don't you? People will always leave a bad boss. Even if the company's bad, but they've got a good boss, they'll stay. So this means, Chelsea, that the firms that address only the pay question, the comp question, are solving for the symptom perhaps and missing the cause, the disease entirely.
And sometimes they are spending a lot of money to put a Band-Aid on a problem.
Oh, yes. And accounting firms don't like spending money, particularly if they're PE back, because there's a lot of accountability on everything they lose or spend. Okay. So let's talk about what firms on the right side of this are actually doing, because one of the things you're brilliant at on this show is being really practical and giving our leaders and firms listening some ways to either mitigate the problem or reassure them if they're on the right line. So the profession didn't arrive at an all-time low in turnover by accident. Some people are actively reducing this. So what are they doing? What's going on?
So the firms that recovered fastest from the big spike in turnover in 2022, they didn't outspend everybody else. The differentiator was not compensation. It was being deliberate in your strategies.
Deliberateness. That's a good word. I'm using that one. So what does that look like in practice?
I think a few things stand out from what we're hearing. First is career path clarity. People don't leave just because they're unhappy today. They leave because they can't see where they're going. And the firms that have done the work to articulate what advancement looks like, not just at the partner track, but all the way through the organization, they're retaining people at higher rates because those people can see a future for themselves.
That sounds simple, but sometimes common sense is not very common, is it?
It is not. Most firms have an implicit understanding of how people advance, but they haven't made it explicit. And the people who benefit from explicit career planning are the ones who are the most at risk of leaving. Those mid-level professionals who are talented enough to have options, but haven't been given a compelling enough reason to stay at the firm.
So we've got that then. We locked down that. We know it's more than comp. What else is at play here?
So we think internal communications, especially during periods of uncertainty, which we have a lot of right now. This came up when we looked at firms who held their turnover during 2022 and 2023, where the people felt informed about the strategy, about the firm's direction, about what change meant for their role. Those were the firms where people stayed engaged, even when the external market was pulling them in another direction.
On your own thought leadership, Chelsea, you speak a lot about transparency of the leadership and the board and how they should be communicating, particularly in times of uncertainty. Firms cannot afford to go quiet during these tough periods, can they?
No, and the firms that did, they really paid for it. People that filled the silence with the staff filled the silence with their own assumptions, and their assumptions were almost always more alarming than the reality. So silence isn't neutral. It really has a cost for the firm.
That's a great soundbite there. Silence isn't neutral. If you want to be relevant, you've got to be visible and you've got to be communicating. Okay. Is there anything else, Chelsea, that these good firms are doing well to keep the turnover down?
Yeah. Intentional development at the manager level specifically. So not just at the partner track, not just for high potentials, but structured feedback, coaching, earlier exposure to leadership responsibilities. This is echoing a lot of what we've talked about in previous episodes on how to retain your staff and how to train and develop them. But the firms that invested here didn't just retain their managers better. They also protected the people that those managers were developing, because a supported manager is a much more effective mentor than one who's burned out and overwhelmed.
That's such an important point. And the work I've done in employer brand, which is what affirmed us to attract talent and hopefully keep talent, it's not all about the money. I did see one firm's website that said, we have a free fruit bowl in our staff room. And we know that's not going to cut it. But you're not talking here about really expensive initiatives. These are more leadership decisions, Chelsea, right?
Yeah, that's right. And none of these things will require a major budget line. They do require attention and consistency. And the firms that are winning on retention right now made those decisions before it was urgent and not in response to a crisis.
So let's wrap this up, Chelsea, here. We've stated the problem. We've given some solutions, but let's bring this on with some things that firm leaders can actually do with this conversation. So for managing partners listening, watching right now, and thinking about their own firm's turnover situation, they want a better handle on it. They want to get ahead of it, be proactive with it. Where would they start?
I think you should try to actually calculate the number. Build a real cost of turnover model that goes beyond the obvious recruiting spend. Include the lost billable hour time during open seats, reduced productivity during ramp up, and an honest estimate of the client relationship disruption, especially in your advisory practices. Most firms do this exercise for the first time, and they're surprised by what they find. But once you know the real number, it becomes a lot easier to justify an investment in retention.
Yeah, because a leadership development program suddenly becomes a way to go, or a better onboarding experience. It looks cheap by comparison.
Exactly. The other thing I would focus on would be to invest in the middle. The manager and senior manager level is where the turnover is most expensive, but also the most preventable. Clear career paths, better feedback loops, earlier exposure to leadership responsibilities. These are the people developing your next generation of partners. If they're burned out or disengaged, or invisible to leadership, the pipeline that you're counting on for succession is a lot more fragile than it might look like.
And maybe the question firm owners, managing partners, those in those responsible positions should be asking is this: are we treating turnover as something that happens to us, you said earlier, a cost of doing business? Or is this something we have the ability to shape, design, be proactive about?
Yeah, that shift in mindset is a great place to start. Firms that see turnover as an external force, the market, the talent shortage, generational change, they're reacting. But firms that see it as a signal about their own operating model, they tend to build something better.
And the thing I've taken from Miss Chelsea is that the costs we can see are the easy ones. It's the costs that don't show up on a report or a spreadsheet. That shapes what a firm becomes. Great conversation as always. Thank you for that insight. If today's episode resonated with you, share it with your leadership team. This is exactly the kind of topic that benefits from being discussed in a room together, not just heard in the earbuds on your way to work.
And if there's a topic that you would like us to dig into in future episodes, send it our way. I love hearing from people who are living these questions every day.
We do. We revisit those on episodes. So we love your contribution. Please like, subscribe wherever you're listening. Leave us a comment or a review. We'd really appreciate that. It helps that more people in the profession find the show and hear these great insights that Chelsea is sharing. Thank you all for listening to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast.
And we'll see you next time.